Okay, good morning. We got a lot to do. I'm going to try. We have about 25 different sources here. Some shorter, some longer. Divrei Torah, some halachos. Different styles a little bit of things that can enhance the Seder of Ezras Hashem. I don't remember exactly how many Haggadahs it all comes from. It comes, I think, from at least 10 different Haggadahs that I was flipping through. I don't even remember who wrote all these Haggadahs, but I tried to put it together. So the first thing we have from a Haggadah called Asapar Tzivotcha. So the first thing that he quotes is very interesting. He says, then the underlying part number one, he says that all the things that are that you put on the Ka'ara, if you take the Rashi Tevos, it spells the word Mizbachacha. It's like having your own Mizbeach. I think it puts a certain framework in terms of everything that's happening on the light. So you have the Maror, the Matzah, the Maror, Zroa, Beitza, Charusas, and Karpas. Hmm. So you have to, I guess, use the mem twice, but you have the Mizbachacha. And he says that's really at least a framework that everything that we're going to be doing the night of the Seder is Kodesh, and is something which has the potential to help one achieve higher levels in Avodas Hashem. So that's the hint, perhaps, in all the items that we have on the Seder plate. Then we have the Simanim that exist on the Seder. So again, the simple understanding of all the Simanim, when we say Kadesh, Urchas, Karpas, etc., is because we want to make sure that everything is done in the proper order at the proper time. But many have explained that there really are at least deeper hints to it as well, because oftentimes we have an order in which we need to do things, and we don't necessarily describe it as we're going along. So in the second part here, he says that there are those that explained it al derech hamoser kadesh urchatz, that Hashem says, imivakesh adam his kadesh, if you want to become kadosh, first urchatz, first you need to clean yourself off, you need to go through a process of tshuva, you need to become ready, then karpas yachatz. Then Hashem says, if there are, regardless of what you have, even if you only have a little bit, even if you only have a little bit of vegetables, yachatz, you should divide it up and you should invite other people together. Doing hachnasas orchim, having other people around the table, is a way of, regardless of how much you have, it's a way of enhancing the experience and involving yourself in the mitzvah. And then magid and rachza, that it's not enough simply to watch yourself, but it's magid, it's to give it over and to tell over the messages of what it means to be an observant Jew, a Torah-abiding Jew. And magid, you tell that over to your children, which again is a major focus of the night. And then rachza, and then they'll also want to go through the same process of cleansing themselves. They'll also be inspired to come closer to Hashem. And then matzah, motzi matzah. So he says that matzah, he suggests to you that there's a pasuk which sounds like matzah can be used sometimes to connote meriva, that there's a machlokas. So he says that matzah is that to make sure to always separate yourself from any machlokas, and that's going to be a way of ensuring that you're always on the up and up. Maror korech shulchan aruch, even if you're korech, even if you're bound together with Mara, with things that are unfortunate, then make sure to continue with all the halacha, shulchan aruch is hint to shulchan aruch, that no matter what happens, to try and keep to the halachos, even as difficult as it may be. And then if you do that, then tzafun baruch, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is the tzafun, who is the hidden one, just like the afikomen is hidden, baruch, he will hopefully instill his brachas on us. And then halal nirtza, that if in all situations you can always say halal, you can always thank Hashem, then we hope that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be meratza, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will accept everything that we're doing. So that's at least a hint in terms of the avodas Hashem which exists on the Leil HaSeder. So an interesting idea number two in the Haggadah, Kamote Shal Rav, he quotes, Rav Brevda quotes from a Talmud of the Gra, that if you put together, in terms of, you know, we realize, I think, intuitively, and if we think about the Leil HaSeder, there's so much going on. He says if you add up all the different mitzvot that you're doing, all the brachos and everything, he says, Shebelel Pesach Yeshan Shishim V'Arba mitzvot. There are 64 different mitzvot that you're doing in one single night. That's the potential that the Leil HaSeder has. If you include all the mitzvot d'oraisa, d'rabbanan, and if you also count the bracha, which you're making as a mitzvah, so that's what you have. So the opportunity that exists when you have such a night, I don't think there's any night that compares to it. So that's how, you know, the potential that exists in the Leil HaSeder. In In source number 3 of Nevenfel in his Haggadah, Yerushalayim b'Moadeh, he points out something which is very important, which I guess is an important hakdama to anything you're going to talk about on the Leil HaSeder. And the underlying part, he says, Re'isi l'orer l'hayer, I feel that it's important to point out, she'tzarech adat, that a person needs to know, in the middle of the page, she'ikar mitzvah sipur yitzias mitzrayim, huwa sipur ala shibiv anisim shenasu be'aretz mitzrayim. This is something which kind of always bothered me a little bit. What's the focus? What are we supposed to be talking about when we're at the Seder? The main thing that we're supposed to be talking about is what happened in Mitzrayim, the Nisan that took place, how difficult it was in Mitzrayim, Hein b'shachat shibud, either during the actual period of slavery, or Hein l'chashe hitchila ha'gula b'shlichas Moshe v'Aaron, or in the process of leaving, the process of the Exodus actually began. And that's why we discuss and we learn all the different psukim that exist on the that are incorporated into the Haggadah, because the psukim tell us all these things that took place. So, and similarly, we also know why exactly it is. We're not going to elaborate upon now, but it's also true that the halachos of Pesach are also included. The proof that we have to that is because when the Chacham asks, what's this night all about? So what do we answer? Ein maftir nachar Pesach afikomen. We answer a halacha that you're not allowed to eat anything after the afikomen. What does that have to do? That's not the mitzvah of the Leil HaSeder. The answer seems to be that somehow, because I guess through the Leil HaSeder, all the Nisan, all the miracles that took place, these mitzvahs were generated, then even if it's just halakha, that's also included in the mitzvah. So that's really what the night is about.
But it's included in the mitzvah of the night discussing what all the Rebbeim used to do?
The parts that are included in the Haggadah are included. But he says that this, in the next part that's underlined, Amnam b'chola pilpulum v'aro she'omen b'nusach Haggadah, the little points that are going to point out about the way the Haggadah says this, she'ein mishtama v'ein nilman me'an inyan ha-shibud v'agula, doesn't reflect anything about the actual shibud, about the actual gula, whether Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's beard was white or not. What does that have to do with leaving Mitzrayim? So again, why the story is there, maybe we'll have one suggestion later. Obviously the Baal Haggadah thought there was something important that can be taken away for the lesson. The fact that they were sitting all night talking about it, talking about the mitzvah, is something important. The drasha that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah had in terms of when you have an obligation to talk about the mitzvah of Yetzias Mitzrayim, those things are important. But all these little vorts about the why does Haggadah use this word, not use that word, if it's not going to enhance our understanding and our appreciation of the mitzvahs, says that's not the mitzvah of night. Is it Torah? It's absolutely Torah. So he says, "In Yosim is a klai de mitzvah sefer yitzias mitzrayim." You don't fulfill through those little ideas in terms of, you know, why does it say? Unless you can explain maybe something about yeshiva, about the nisim, because of why you hit the rasha in the mouth and don't hit him in the head. Okay, if somehow based on that you can appreciate the mitzvah of or the shibud or the nisim more, so fine. But again, why that is a nice vartor. And he says that, and then he in the continuation he does say that obviously many of the gedolim have divrei Torah on that. So he says that's because you have an entire Yontif. Over the rest of Yontif, the Haggadah is certainly a great text to use as a springboard for discussing any idea of Torah. But for the unique mitzvah,
why included in Haggadah?
So everything that's included in the Haggadah does relate. I mean, maybe we'll elaborate on it a little bit later, but everything that is in the Haggadah does relate on at least the surface level, part of it. Meaning, like, you have the story of all the Talmidei Chachamim sitting in Bnei Brak. Right. So the point of that, at least on the surface, is to show that even though they're Chachamim and even though they're Nevonim, so they're sitting all night and they're learning about Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim. So it teaches us in terms of the halachos of the night, it does teach us something. Now, again, with all the pilpulim about why, who was there and everything else, maybe that's not as important, unless, according to some, that does reflect on the halacha. Or Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, it doesn't tell us the story of his beard. The only thing he's talking there is something about the drasha. The Harani Kivin Shimshon is only because he's trying to stress that only now he appreciates how exactly the mitzvah of Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim should be fulfilled. But in terms of it being a beautiful source for Divrei Torah, absolutely. I'm not trying to minimize or take away, but in terms of what the mitzvah is, what are we supposed to be doing at the Leil HaSeder? So that focus is supposed to be on the Shibud, on the Nisim, something that has to do directly with Yetzias Mitzrayim. Perhaps a little bit more broadly, if it encourages and strengthens one's emunah, which is certainly one of the goals of the night, at least that's more closely related, but just the other beautiful divrei Torah that come out. So there's plenty of yontif left, there are day meals, and there's plenty of time to learn all those and to discuss those as well. So I tried, I don't think I fully succeeded, in mostly putting in divrei Torah that would be good for the Seder, but they're not all, so you have to use your judgment to figure out which ones might be more appropriate for the rest of yontif. But certainly some of them, I think, are fundamental to the Seder itself.
Did Rabbi Dangenfeld say anything about including in the Haggadah, or just,
No, everything that's included in the Haggadah, again, does have a connection. All he's saying is that if you're saying a Dvar Torah about a certain word, why did the Baal Haggadah use this word and not use a different word? Unless that somehow reflects something about the Nes, then that's a discussion for a different time. That's not the mitzvah of Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim. Just because it relates to the Haggadah doesn't automatically make it part of Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim. Everything that's included does have a connection, and that's why it's included. But again, how broad and how far away we're going to take it from that, from the basic connection is perhaps just, you know, regular Divrei Torah and not necessary for the mitzvah of Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim. Okay, number four on the top of the left. So the Saba Mikelm and the Haggadah of the Gedolim from Kelm explains a little bit what's the idea of Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim. He says, Inyan Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim kimo hagarin, it's like a seed, asher hu holech v'chozer me'akodem ala ma'uchar, which kind of goes circularly. Shemitchila tzamach, it begins to grow, acharasa v'pol peros, until it grows large enough that it can produce its own fruit. V'achargach nishem reihem v'akoach, haynu hagarinim. And then the fruit has potential for the future because the fruit houses the seeds. And then it continues circularly that those seeds can then become planted in the ground, and then they also produce fruit. So he says the same thing is true when it comes to Yetzias Mitzrayim. That mitchila hitzigu avos yidias Hashem yisbarach v'sichlam. That originally happened, the avos were able to, on their own, were able to reach a full recognition of God. But Hashem wanted, v'achagach ratzah HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'hashrish ha'idiyah zos b'chol zera Yaakov. He wanted this to be something permanent. God wanted this to be something which would last in all the generations, in all the seeds, and all the fruit that's going to follow. Asher alkein hotziyam Mitzrayim b'pirsum gadol. So when he took them out of Mitzrayim, he took them out with a large fanfare, so that so that in the children would be implanted permanently this appreciation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of God, of what God has done for us, of the Nes and Nedarim for us, of our belief in Hashem. And at that point, after they've experienced everything, it says, at that point, they managed that they really felt this connection to God. And that produced a lot of fruit. At the point when they get to the end of by Kriyas Yamsuf, even a lowly maidservant was able to basically have full prophecy, which is an amazing feat for your, you know, your average person. That everybody in Klal Yisrael was able to achieve that is something amazing, which showed the fact that it really did work. But as time goes on, it's going to lessen. It's not going to be as tangible anymore. It's not going to be something that they can really appreciate it. So what did he, and it would only remain a thought, and it wouldn't be implanted in the heart. If it's not implanted in the heart, then just like if the seed is implanted in the ground, there's no way for it to sprout in the future, so too here also. So Hashem realized that every year, I'm going to command them to have this mitzvah of Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim. The purpose is that they should implant in their hearts again to really appreciate, that Bnei Yisrael should appreciate what God has done, what God did for them, what He continues to do for them. And that will allow the cycle to continue, that if it's planted deeply enough inside of them, then the seed can grow, can flower into beautiful fruits, and then year after year it continues as the fruits go and produce more seeds. So again, it's this mitzvah which is there for this purpose of implanting within us what Emunah b'Hashem means. That being the case, the point that the next source in the Haggadah, Kamotzeh Shel Rav, who just really puts together a lot of different things from other sources, and what he says makes a lot of sense. He says that one could have asked, what's the purpose of the mitzvah of Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim? Is it a mitzvah b'fnei atzma, the underlying part? Is it its own mitzvah? O shema rak hechsher v'achon al mitzvah pesach ma'asamor ki yeshayid al shum mahim. Or is the only reason that we need to know the story in order that we can appreciate and fulfill properly the other mitzvahs of the night? I can't properly do the mitzvah of Korban Pesach, or our Zecher. I can't properly do the mitzvah of Matzah. I can't properly do the mitzvah of Mar. if I don't have the Sefer Yetziyat Mitzrayim? So is the Sefer Yetziyat Mitzrayim its own mitzvah for its own purpose? Or is it merely a way of setting up a scenario where I can, in the most ideal way, perform all the other mitzvos halayla? So he says that you see from the Haggadah, you see from many places, you see from the idea that we just said, but he says also from the idea of Echol Hamar B'Hareza Meshuvach, that the Haggadah says that the more you talk about it, the better, that obviously it's not just a preparation. If only it was as a preparation, then once you get to the knowledge that you have, now you can fulfill the mitzvahs of Pesach, Matzah, and Morah properly. So it's done. There's no reason to continue. If it's its own mitzvah with its own purpose, so then kol amar ba'arezim meshumach, the more the better, because the more we can deeply implant within us these values of emunah v'Hashem, of what God has done for us, of what it means to be part of Klal Yisrael, so then we've accomplished so much more. And that's why he suggests, that's why the Haggadah stresses the fact and that's why right after the paragraph of Avadim Hayinu, when Avadim Hayinu ends with the Kol Amar B'Lasaber V'Tiyas Mitzayim Reza Meshuvach, then what do we go straight into? Ma'isav Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Yehuda Ben Azariah, they're all sitting in Bnei Brak telling the entire story the entire night. So that's exactly what the proof is, that these Talmidei Chachamim, they certainly knew the reasons, the basic reasons for mitzvahs of Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. So why do they need to sit around all night? There's no reason for them to sit around all night if the only purpose of telling over the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim is to facilitate fulfilling the other mitzvahs of the night. What you see from the story is no, Kol Amar Ba'Arezim Meshuvach, that Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim is its own mitzvah, and therefore needs to have its own focus, and therefore, even if you know the story, there's more that you can gain, there's more you can delve into it by appreciating the story more deeply each and every year.
Question, what do you mean they're sitting the whole night? What encompasses the word the whole night?
So Kriya Shema, it says that the students came in the morning and told them it was daybreak. Sounds like the whole night. Okay, the interesting question is why. Okay, so make sure that they shift out, they wake up in time for yourself. My Kriya Shema.
Okay, yeah.
Four in the morning. Okay.
Four in the morning.
Okay. Okay, fine. So turning to the next part in number six, the beginning of the second page, is something that Rav Shlomo Zalman in the Haggadah that was compiled after his death. He asks, why is it that we drink four cups of wine on Pesach? Everyone knows why we have four cups of wine on Pesach. We have four Lashonos of Geula, Votesi, Vitzalti, Vigalti, Lakati, talk to our redemption in four different ways. That's why we have four cups of wine. But says Rav Shlomo Zalman, no, that's not what I'm asking. He says, Ukfar Shalu, in the second line, the underlying part, Madua tiknu l'umatam davka arba kosos yayin, below arba matzos o arba peros. Why four cups of wine? I understand the number four. The number four comes from Votesi Vitalti Vigalti Vlakati. But why not four matzahs? Why not four fruits? Why not four, I don't know, whatever it is that you want to eat? As long as you remember the number four, you've accomplished it. So why is it specifically Chazal? Oh, you can answer, okay, Chazal always, you know, stuck things on wine. But she's trying to understand this point. So Shlomo Zalman says in the second paragraph of his Baragon of Shlomo Zalman Harbach that Arba Lashonos Halalu Heim Arba Sugim Shel Geula V'Atzal Shekol Echad Mehem Gadol U'Merom Mikodmo. So we shouldn't think that when we say that there are four Lashonos of Geula, four languages of redemption, that it's simply synonyms. He says that's not true. He said each one is a different form of Geula that builds on the one before it. So he says, again, the exact details. He says basically you have the Otesi that originally they were taken out, then not just that they were removed, but Vitzalti was they were completely removed from any Shibud. And then Vigalti, then there's the Gula, the leaving, and then Vilakati, which is that we had this new special relationship with Hashem. They all build on each other. So in the next paragraph, the underlying part, he says, Lufichach tiknu davka arba kosos yayin. That's why specifically we have four cups of wine, below arba matzos or arba peros, and not four matos or four fruits. Dine de peros, when you have fruit, when you have something else to eat, ha'adam nana me'egos ha'rishon, yose me'eshe me'egos ha'sheni. Normally when you're eating something, it's the first one that you enjoy the most, because you haven't had it yet. So you enjoy the first one. The second one, okay, you might enjoy it as much, or maybe it decreases your enjoyment as it goes on. You're never going to enjoy the second piece of cake more than the first piece of cake. You might want more cake, and you might enjoy the cake, you know, Pesach can have a regular cake, but okay, it's the same idea. And then he says, but that's not true with wine. Shakol kos v'kos mosifa simcha. Every cup of wine builds on the one before it, and everyone can add more simcha. So he says that's why, for those who enjoy drinking wine, I guess. For the men. And it depends what you're drinking, I guess.
But then,
certainly, even if you're not enjoying it in terms of the simcha, certainly every cup of wine does build on the one before it. That idea is certainly true, which is why most people hear that reaction aren't enjoying the wine, because it does build on the ones before it. But that's the idea that he says, that wine is unique in that every cup of wine, and that way it's a much closer connection to the geula, because it wasn't just four separate languages of geula, but each one built on the one before it. So too the four cups of wine build on the one that preceded it.
Would it be like a good idea to bring out a better bottle of wine for each cup? And make a bracha on that?
You don't have to.
Which is funny, you should just make a bracha if you bring out a better bottle.
It's much more complicated than that.
Oh, yeah?
It's much more complicated than that. If you know it's coming out, if it's on the table, there are a lot of details. It's a good topic for a different time.
Souls would have fun.
When you make a tovah meitiv is a very complicated question. Okay. So moving right along, number 7, the Haggadah Arzei Halavanon, they put together many things from different gedolim. So here also, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach tells a story. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach says that he once went, Bialdusa Halachim Aviv, Bechag HaPesach, Lakotel HaMaravi. He went to the Kotel. V'aviv hitzigo fnei Hagaon, Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld. So his father took him to Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld, Rabbi Yerushalayim. And Shalom Hagaon Rabbi Yosef Chaim, so Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld asked him, Hoyim Shalta Tadalat Kushos. Did you ask your father the four questions? It's after the Seder. Did you ask the four questions? Vanahei, of course I did. Hosev v'shalom. Then he asked him, Uma anolcha abba l'shelom adu matpun shteipamim. So what did your father answer? Why do we dip two times? And he realized, And I think before he answered, even Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld said to him that the obligation to answer the children's questions is not simply that they ask this question and then you just go through with the Haggadah. It's important that they understand what's the answer to the question that I just asked. Sometimes they're asking the four questions, and you say, okay, Ava de Mayino, and you go on. Or you say, okay, now your question is all answered, we were slaves in Mitzrayim, and then you go through. If the child is sharp enough or awake enough, the child might say, how does that answer the question? And he learned from this story that what Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld was teaching was that, you know, you need to make sure that the child understands why you're doing these things. You need to know that the matzah was because we were taken out of Mitzrayim quickly and we didn't have time to let the dough rise. And the maror is because the Mitzrayim left everything bitter. Why you the masubin, where you're reclining, because of derech eres. And the truth is, and this is what he's in the number 7 continued paragraph from the bottom. I'm sorry.
Masubin because of derech eres.
Cheres, to be like being free. And then the 7 continue, he does point out that the one that he asked is the most difficult one. So why do we dip two times? And he says in that paragraph, towards the bottom of the page, Wilamashim Abidun Shtefam Zebemes Kusha Chazak. That's actually a very difficult question. But Parshalo came to Gemara, and the Gemara asks that. And the Gemara says, Ida Mishum Hakiram, Kadilorachal Vishol Ashinim Shabbai Bazeh. There you can answer the child and say, it's for the purpose of doing something different so that you'll ask questions. Okay, how often you can give that answer, you have to be careful. But again, the point is that if the child understands that, so maybe that in and of itself can sensitize the child, say, okay, now let's look out for other things that seem strange, and ask more questions, which is part of what we want.
And normally, when the dipping, what is that normally in the context of?
What do you mean? When do we normally dip?
Yes, once. When do we normally dip once?
I guess it depends how you normally.
All other nights we dip once. We dip pizza into. Because I know that's what my kids would say. We'll have them twice.
Generally speaking, our mode of eating is different than what they had.
Eat by hand. Because we did have silk.
We don't dip at all.
Because on all the nights we dip once. Right.
We don't dip at all. No, they didn't dip either.
Okay.
So they said we never dip. So why do we dip two times? So one is that, well, I think once we're dipping, so we have two different reasons to dip. We discussed a little bit why we're dipping in Karpas yesterday. There are maybe different reasons. And then tomorrow we're dipping in the Charoses because of the tit, because of the cement, or whatever the reasons are. So I guess once we're dipping, so maybe we have a double dip. But
double dip
in question? It's okay. It's separate.
What?
Okay, so that's what that's one point. So that was just one point to keep in mind, is that, you know, as the child says, well, you didn't answer my questions, that we have an obligation to figure out, okay, so what is the answer to the question that you asked? So the new Haggadah that I got this year from Rav Shalom Shvadron, so I think a lot of the things that are coming up are going to be from this Haggadah, from the Magid of one of the Magidim in Yerushalayim, passed away. So he asks, he says that at the end of Halach Ma'anya, so we say that Hashata Hacha, you know, this year we're here, Lishana Haba Ba'arad Yisrael, and next year we're going to be in Yisrael. So he says in here in number 8 on top, Nishal Sasha Ela. He asks the question, Im Hashta Hacha, if right now we're here, Im Hashana Nimtsoim Anu Begolos Hamar, right now we're sitting in Golos. Again, at the point is that we're beginning the Haggadah and we're going to put ourselves into a state of simcha. So what kind of hakdama is this? What kind of introduction is this to say, okay, now we're sitting in God, okay, in the future, you know, next year we'll be in Eretz, okay, well, how does that help me right now? Right now, it should be depressing that I have to sit here in Golos. We don't have the Beis HaMikdash. We're not the way things should ideally be. So why are we stressing that as we're beginning the Haggadah? And he says, "Vatshuva brura." The answer is clear. Ayideshan is donin ba'asid. The lashon haba b'necha harishik farmi hatan is mali simcha. That the way a person is supposed to try and look at things is that if a person knows that there's something which is guaranteed in the future, Hashem tells us, "I'm going to take you out." Will it be next year? We don't know. We hope it's going to be next year. But will I take you? Are you going to be able to? Are you going to come out of this? The answer is absolutely yes. That's supposed to have its effect now as well, because that's really, if you want to try and grow in life, it's only going to be if you're looking forward, and you're going to be looking at, okay, I have the potential, I can do this, and it's true, that's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says that if a person wants a little bit more depressing way, but the Gemara says that if a person is afraid they're going to sin, so Yazkir lo Yom HaMisa, should think about that the day of death. Again, it's not supposed to be a focus in life, we're not supposed to be depressed in life, but again, if a person is a thinking individual and takes life seriously, then the fact that he or she can realize that, you know, in the future I'm going to have to be responsible for what I'm doing now, can actually create, in a certain sense, a reality now. And it puts things in a much more serious, in a serious context, and can help a person overcome challenges. He says that's the same idea here. It's hashtahacha, right now we're here, and in a certain sense that's depressing. But the fact that l'shana haba b'nei chor, that we know that next year, in the future, God promises that there's going to be a geula, there is a future for Klal Yisrael outside of the galus, that's in a certain sense provides relief now and gives us a perspective towards the future. Okay, moving right along. Maybe we'll actually finish. I don't think we have a chance. Okay, and then in number 9, again from Rav Nevin Salzaga, they said something very interesting. So in the Manishtana, so one of the questions that we had mentioned that we ask about is the Hatseva, is the fact that we are reclining. So he says that besides the basic reason which we just gave of Derech Eretz, he says in the top line on the right hand side is Darshu Chazal Vayasev Elohim Esa'am, that Hashem at the beginning of Parashas Bishalach, Hashem sort of made Esau go in a circle in the longer way, right? Derech Yamsuf. So the Gemara learns, the Chazal learned out from there, Amar Rabbeinu Afilu Ani Shev Yisrael Lo Yochal Ad Sheyesev, that even a poor person should not eat on Pesach until he's reclining. Shekach asa lohem HaKadosh Baruch Hu shenemar vayasev Elokim. Because God, when he was taking them out of Egypt towards the Yamsuf, had Meisha reclining, as the Pasuk says, vayasev Elokim, the language of Haseva. So Levinsal says in the next paragraph, the Tzarek Bir, I don't understand. First of all, Madua Hayutzrichim Bnei Yisrael Biyosam Borchim Heipar Mitzrayim Lashavasu Lhasev Al Shulchan. Why was it necessary that while Bnei Yisrael are the Mitzrayim are... I'm sorry?
It doesn't mean Haseba there.
That's the second question. That's what Chazal means. That's what, right, what Chazal, again, that's what the simple understanding of the Pasuk is. What he's bothered by is Chazal are learning out from the Pasuk, it's the same Shoresh, that the obligation to sit down is, it doesn't take it because it happens to use a word, it says because, Shekach Asalem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because that's what God had them reclining, Shenemar Vayasev Elokim. So that's the two questions are, the first one is, why at that point is God having them reclining? While they're running away, okay, they'll sit down, they'll relax a little bit. What was the purpose? And then the next paragraph, Gam Kasha, Sherei Befurish Bamikra Mawa Tom Sheishev Hashem Esam. We know why God did quote, a haseba, which was a sivur. Rukadesha Verosa Mokama lo yitnu lev lafsa Mitzrayim. The Torah says that he took them in a roundabout way so that if they see that there's fighting, they shouldn't turn around and go back to Mitzrayim. Now it's going to be more difficult for them. So why would Chazal, Madu Imken, Hotsiu Chazal Tamikra Medei Pshuto? So why did Chazal feel the need to take the pasuk out of its most simple understanding, the Darshu, and instead having this Rosh Hashem Hesibam V'yashu Mesubam Al Shulchan, that Hashem had them reclining on next to tables on chairs while they're going out of Mitzrayim? What's this Medrash trying to teach us? So he says something very interesting. It says, V'nira Bazem, towards the bottom on the right hand side, Shinea Ibn Ezra Hikshad. Ibn Ezra asks, Madu lo nilchamu b'nei Yisrael ma'mitzriyim sheradfu achareyim? Why didn't b'nei Yisrael fight back? V'harim misparam shal b'nei Yisrael har'yarav b'yoser. In terms of numbers, b'nei Yisrael were outnumbering them. So why were they just running? Why didn't they even, doesn't seem like they even gave a thought to the possibility of fighting back against the Egyptians. So on top of the next column, the Tirith of Ibn Ezra answers, Shehayos she'ad ata hayu b'nei Yisrael avadim, since until this point b'nei Yisrael were slaves, ha'iso tvua b'nafsham hargoshas avdus. The sense, the feeling of being a servant was already ingrained deeply in them. And they couldn't just simply fight back. It wasn't that easy, because they viewed themselves as slaves to the Egyptians. And he wants to explain the pasuk based on this. Even according to what Chazal learned out, they weren't completely taking the pasuk out of its context. How not? So he says the reason that Hashem had them being beheseba via save is still the same. It's still so that they shouldn't go back. But that if they saw they would have become overwhelmed and they would have gone back to Mitzrayim. But why was it? Why is it that they needed to via save? Why is it that God thought that they were going to go back to Mitzrayim? Because this feeling of avdus was ingrained in them. That was the reason for the concern of them coming back. So Hashem gave them this Heseba, Hoshiva Misubim, he had them reclining. What it's referring to, whether it literally means they were reclining, or what Chazal are trying to point to, is what God was trying to do at that moment of Vayasev was to change their perspective, and it had to be done slowly. So God had them, maybe figuratively, reclining, because that was a way of them reflecting the fact that now we're free, now we're Bnei Chorin. When we were in that state of Avdus and Mitzrayim, we never would have had that opportunity to be able to recline and to lean back. But now, when they're going to be in the process of leaving, and God realizes that so fundamentally ingrained in them is this sense of Avdus, that if anything happens, they're going to run back to Mitzrayim. So Vayasev Elokim. Again, the simple understanding is that he took them in a circuitous way. But what Chazal are saying more deeply is that the reason that it had to be done, whatever it was that happened, the reason that it took longer, and the reason that God also was giving him this time and this experience of, again, either figuratively or actually reclining, was because the point was that they needed, before they could escape fully from Mitzrayim on a psychological level, was they needed to experience Chayrus. So slowly Hashem revealed that to them. So he had them reclining. Is that going to make them feel everything? No. But is it a step? Is it a step in that direction? Is it turning them to a point where they're going to be able to be free? Yes. And that's what Chazal are trying to highlight. And that's really the purpose of us on the night also of Pesach, too, in the last paragraph in that section on the right, is of leaning on Pesach. It's not simply to recline. It's not enough to recline. But it's the same idea that God was trying to implant in Bnei Yisrael. It's the feeling of what the reclining is about. That the reclining is about derech eretz. It's about experiencing what it means to leave Mitzrayim and to come out. So the same way Hashem gave them that experience in order to help them with the transition from avdus to chayrus, from slavery to freedom, that's part of what that seva was supposed to accomplish. It's not just a technical halacha of leaning. It realizes itself in the technical halacha, but the implication of it is much more, and is to really help us in the same way that to experience what it means to live derech, derech eros.
And then why on one side, why on the other side?
So the Gemara says it's because we're afraid you're going to choke if you're on the right side. It has to do with the way the if you lean on the right, the way the pipes line up.
Right.
There. So, okay. So that's what Rav Nevin is also. I think a fascinating insight into a seva, into a measure that on the surface really is very, very difficult to understand. Okay. Back to the Haggadah Arzei Alvan on number 10. Megalnas Hamatzos. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach again points out that it's very important that, you know, sometimes we say, okay, now we're going to uncover the matzos. Now we're covering the matzos. So he says, it's important to understand what's going on. Why sometimes are we covering it? Why sometimes are we doing it? And you shouldn't just be like somebody who can't see, who's feeling around in darkness, not understanding what are we doing on the night of the Seder. Why does it say in the Haggadah now to uncover the matzos? Why does it say to cover the matzos? What's going on? So he just says, just one point to understand the basic rules. It is that Yavin on the third line, fundamentally the halacha should have been that the matzah should be open, should be revealed for the entire Haggadah. Why? Because it's called Lechem Oni, and one of the judges of Chazal, so one of them is that it's a piece like an Ani has, but the other one is that means like talking. Lechem She'onim Olav Dvarim Harbe. We talk about the miracle on this bread. So basically, by having the matzos open in front of us, it creates a connection between the Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim and the Lechem. So that's, he says, that's the starting point, is that really the matzos should be uncovered the whole time. He says, Ela She'bishnei Ofanim Mechasim Es HaMatzos. There are two factors that will cause us to then cover the matzos. Either b'shash notel magbias hakos, yish lechasos hamatzos. If you're picking up the cup of wine, so then you cover up the matzos. Why? For the same reason that we cover the chalos on Shabbos. This idea of not embarrassing the matzah, that which is hamotzi, because the hagafen really should be coming afterwards. And since we're showing an importance to the cup of wine, so we cover the matzos back up. So anytime we're going to be focusing on the cup of wine, so we cover up the matzos. The only other time in which we say it is in the bottom, to the bottom of the paragraph, the underlined part. V'ofen hasheni lifnei amiras manishtana, before manishtana, shamru b'gemar, because the Gemara says at that point, shemisalkin hashulchan kadil oras hayel adim lismoa. Now the reason that we take off, some of you will take off the kara at that point, but if your matzos aren't on your kara, so then you'd also cover the matzos. For the same point is that the Gemara says that before where the children are asking the questions of the manishtana, and we want to encourage them to ask more, so we do something strange. We take away the table. In those days, they had small tables in front of them. We take away what seems to be the focus of the night. We take away the kara, and we remove it. We remove the matzah. We never ate anything. So it's going to make the children that much more inquisitive. So at that point, since basically the matzahs weren't supposed to be on the table, so also we cover up the matzahs. But again, fundamentally, the matzahs should be uncovered, because that's really what Magid is about, talking about when the matzos are in front of you. But if there's a clash either between the wine or because you're supposed to remove from the table, so then you cover up the matzos.
And this encourages you to talk about matzo more?
It encourages you to ask questions. I mean, there are two different things. We have specific questions that we want the children to ask at the manishtana, and then there's a general idea that we want them to A, be awake, so if we do strange things, it will keep them involved, and B, we want them to be in sort of the mode of asking questions. And if they see one thing that's strange, and then they're kind of like, had this idea like, let's look what else is going on. It's a little bit weird. And then since the ideal method of giving over the mitzvah of Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim, the story, is through question answer, so the more questions they ask, the more answers we can give. So then it provides, hopefully, to the point is to get to the mitzvah. But we do these things in order to help us reach that goal.
So you say, I'm glad you asked that question. The reason that I covered the matzah just now or took it away is because
it's
I'm supposed to?
No, so it's
to get you to ask me questions?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because the focus of the night is to ask questions. Let's see, can you think of anything else strange that we're doing? Pay attention.
Okay.
I think that's
why is this inyan of asking questions so much more so on Pesach than it is on any other holiday?
Because the Torah says you got to live in
Pesach. I know, but we don't have to. They don't. They're not supposed to ask questions about Shavuos or Sukkot or.
They can, but the mitzvah wasn't designed to be given over. I mean, we don't have a mitzvah really of Sipur, just telling over a story really. Other than just regular Lima HaTorah, which is a different mitzvah. We don't really have any mitzvah which is simply to tell over a story. There's no mitzvah. Again, there's no obligation, maybe that's the better way to say it. I mean, obviously you fulfill a mitzvah. There's no obligation to tell on Shavuos, you tell your children what happened. It makes sense. It's certainly a good opportunity to teach them about Shavuot.
So I'm saying, why would God command it specifically for Pesach?
So that's what we. That's a little bit what we were talking about, is that Sifur Yetzias Mitzrayim is so fundamental to our emunah. We do so many mitzvot there for Yetzias Mitzrayim. It says the Saba Mikelm said, it's that which is going to ingrain in the future generations emunah in Hashem. So the focus of it is much more than any other mitzvah, and it's true. But again, in terms of the Torah, we always find that the Ramban in the Parshas Vos talks about how the basis for our emunah really is the fact that we left Mitzrayim. Great, turning to number 11, the top left, it's in the Haggadah Tiferes Shimshon from Rav Pinkus. So he says, he comments on the Vafilu at the end of Avodim Ha'ino. We mentioned this a little bit beforehand. But Vafilu Kulanu Chachamim, even if we're wise, we know the story, we've heard this, we've been there, done that. We know everything that's going on in the Seder. Even so, Mitzvah Leinu Lestaper B'Tzias Mitzrayim. We still have the Mitzvah to tell over the story of B'Tzias Mitzrayim. So he says, Gam Adam Sheyodeas Kol Shtashus Ham Oro Shoy B'Tzias Mitzrayim. Even though everything that happened, all of Lahacha Yosef Slot Hadvarim Kol Shana Mechadash. There is the Mitzvahs every year to try as much as possible to make it feel new. And he says, Nekudas Unogats Lo Rakos Sifur B'Tzias Mitzrayim. This isn't just an important perspective in terms of how to fulfill the Mitzvah of the story of Tzias Mitzrayim, but it's generally an important perspective to have. And he says, he quotes from the Saba Mikelm, says, "Madu advarim shehis chanchenu b'hem b'yaldusin, the things that we learned as children, sheyesh Elokim b'reish nayv haaretz, that there's a God who created the world and He's watching over everything. Tzias Mitzrayim, Tzias Yamsuf, all these things that are amazing things and amazing stories, we're not so amazed by them when we get a little bit older. Okay, just." Okay, yeah, God created the world, and He said, okay, and it's kind of what happened. So he says, Pesher Hadover, is Mitesha Shemanu Tadvar Ma'olah Rishonu B'Yadusenu, Kishazichlinu Ayachalush. We learned about them originally when we were children, and our minds weren't as strong then. We couldn't ask as many penetrating questions. And then, Hayadiyah V'Havana, our understanding, B'Das Kushta, was, kind of capped at that point. So if our knowledge of the stories, is capped at a childish point in our understanding, and that's all we have, then we're not going to be so amazed by it when we're older, when our thinking has broadened. So he said that's why it's just an important perspective in general. It's not just, Sifur Yetzias Mitzrayim maybe teaches us this lesson, which is that any story, any area of Torah that we've only learned a long time ago, there's so much more that we can gain from it. I think that's why we often try to do that here also, is re-examine stories that we've looked at, psukim that we've looked at, in order, because there is so much more that can be gained from it. So he says that the mitzvah Sifur Yetzias Mitzrayim sort of serves as a model for that perspective in life of looking and trying to understand more. Maybe we're not going to finish. We'll see. Number 12. I spoke too soon. That's basically in number 12, Rav Shlomo Shvadron basically makes the same point that we just said. Because why are we telling over the same story each and every year? So he says, he compares it. He said that the Sabami Slavatka once gave one of the Bachrim Musar, and he told him, whatever he was reacting to, and he gave him you shouldn't have done this, and explained it to him. And then a week later, he gave him the exact same Musar Shmuz. So the Bachar said to him, and you just told me the same thing last week, why do you have to repeat it again? So he said in the last part, the underlying part over there, he says, if you're in the train station in London, that if you're standing on the train tracks in London and the train's beginning to come and the conductor is about to toot the horn, are you going to tell him, Kum tomer gama ashi shmata kfar esmol es kol atzvira? You're going to say, okay, well, yesterday you sounded the horn, so there's no reason to do it today. So he said, obviously not. He said, the point is that the more we hear things and when things repeat, then they become more ingrained in us. So even though it's something which every year we hear, the effect can be that much more. Rav Shmuel says in the next part, we say in the Haggadah, Sheparo lo gazar el al zecharim, that Lavan was trying to bikesh lakor asakol, was trying to uproot all of Klal Yisrael. But Paro only tried to wipe out the males. So he asks a very strong question. The whole purpose of Haggadah is to show how great the miracle was when we left Mitzrayim. And then we come along, and the Baal Haggadah kan mumayit bazel lechora. He's blessing the Nes. Lavan was this big Russia who tried to destroy everything, and God was able to stop him. Paro, he wasn't as bad. He only was trying to wipe out the males. He wasn't trying to wipe out everybody. So why in the story, when we're trying to say how amazing and then large the mitzvah was of leaving Mitzrayim, so why would we now bring something which seems to lessen it? So he says, very interesting, because Venir Bezesh has Klal Yisrael Kulo Yashalachlos. He said, you have to realize that the point number one is that it's impossible, there's no way to completely destroy Klal Yisrael. It's an impossibility. God created Klal Yisrael, and Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people, are going to be here forever. So he says, he has a proof for it, but we'll have to skip that for now. But basically what he says is that what the Baal HaGadah is saying is that in fact what Paro was doing was more dangerous than what Lavan was doing. Lavan was trying to uproot everything. There's no way that that's going to succeed. To try and uproot everything, God already decided, Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people are going to exist. So Lavan was doomed from the beginning. Paro realized, that's what Paro was a little bit more of a chacham. He was a bigger Russia. He said, okay, I'm not going to try to destroy everything. Let the women survive. And then there's no automatic... You know, God doesn't automatically gonna kick in with saving Klal Yisrael if it's not talking about the destruction of all Klal Yisrael. So Paro said, okay, I'm not going to try to destroy all Klal Yisrael. So in this line, it actually talks about how much worse the potential was for the decree of Paro, that since it wasn't trying to destroy everything, there was more of a chance that it was going to succeed, because we only have a promise that God isn't going to destroy all of Klal Yisrael. And even though it wasn't based on that promise, still God saved us. So that shows an even deeper message to the miracle of Klal Yisrael surviving what happened in Mitzrayim. In number 13, if you turn the page a little bit sideways, so one of the psukim that we quote is Revavak Yitzemach Hasadeh Satich Vatarbi Vatigdoli. So again, the details of all these psukim seem a little bit complicated, but basically the pasuk there seems to be referring to the miracle that took place in the field, that the, again, we've spoken on the past that the women encouraged and enticed their husbands to continue to have children, even in the terrible conditions of Mitzrayim. And the babies were born in the fields because they needed to protect them. And these miracles happened that they could drink from the stones, and the babies were basically taken care of. And in the underlying part, he says that the Gemara tells us, the cave in Shemakirim by Mitzrayim, Bar and Lahargan. Once the Egyptians realized that they were giving birth in the fields, they wanted to kill them. Vinatzad Laham Nes, and a miracle happened, Vinivloin Bakarka. And the babies became swallowed up inside the ground. Umavin Shvarim Mecharshin Agabon. And then the Mitzrayim came and they threshed on top of them in order to kill the babies, because they saw that they were swallowed up into the ground. The Egyptians threshed on top of them with oxen and, oxen. Shnemra gabi charshu charshim, on top of us they were threshing. So he says, what were the Mitzrayim thinking? Im chashvu shahayisaridas adama. If they thought that it was just an earthquake, but they saw the babies get swallowed up into the ground. That's how they knew to bring the animals to plow on top of them. So if they thought that it was an earthquake and the babies happened to get swallowed up, so of course they're dead already. So there's no point in threshing on top of them. Elamai, what do they think? That they're still alive. So then it had to be, case that you're talking about, how is it possible they got swallowed up in the ground and it was still alive? The only way it's possible is that it was a miracle from God. Says, and how are they fighting against a miracle? They're coming to thresh on top of the babies after they saw that God himself protected them by swallowing up in the ground? That doesn't make any sense. What were they thinking? Says, this is an example of what Chazal said, that when a person hates somebody, it just doesn't think clearly anymore. It made no sense. Because if they thought it was a natural occurrence that the babies got swallowed up, so there's no point in threshing on top of them. Of course they're dead. They're buried under the ground. There's no saving them. And if they realized that it was a miracle, so they really thought that if God was able to swallow them up in the ground, he's not going to be able to protect them from these animals that are threshing on top of them. So you just see that when a person becomes so overcome with hatred, just doesn't think clearly anymore. And the truth is, it didn't make any sense, but that's what they did. another Haggadah now, we didn't see him from the Lekach Ralibov yet, from Rabbi Avram Shor Shlita. So he says, the Pasuk says, Vayareyu O son of HaMitzrim. So we understand that to mean that they made things difficult for us. He says, Shemati, Shamar, from his father, Shamar Bishas HaSeder B'Shem Sfarim, that his father quoted from his mother's farm, Shakavanehi, what does Vayareyu mean? Hisha Asa O sonu Lanashim Ra'im. They made us into bad people. Meaning they tried to put into us that we were bad people. Paro Arasha Shul Klipa Shul Tuma. Okay, whatever exactly that means. The Paro, this evil Paro. Yada Hetev Shetzrichim Lahaklish Es Bnei Yisrael Sheyav Dutikvasam. The only hope for being able to maintain Klal Yisrael in Egypt is if they have no desire to leave anymore. If they've lost all hope. And he realized that the way to do that is to get them in a sense to try and give up. So he tried to convince them that you're no good, you're good for nothing, and that's vayoreyu. He tried to instill in them this sense of you're worthless and there's nothing good going to come of you, and then if they don't want to leave, so God's not going to save them. And he says that, and then he quotes the Mishnah in Perkei Avot, says, Al ti rasha b'fnei atzmecha. You shouldn't be a rasha, an evil person in your own eyes. And the Rambam explains in his Perush HaMishnayos, when a person views himself as a Rasha, and that he's worthless, so then everything that he does, whether he does mitzvot, and he thinks his mitzvot are worthless, and if he does averos, there's no coming back to do tshuva, because it's also worthless. It's one of the most dangerous thoughts that a person can have in terms of growth, is thinking that I'm worthless, I'm no good, I can't do anything. He says that's what Paro realized, and that's what Paro was trying to instill in Klal Yisrael, a sense of you're no good, nothing's going to come of you, and therefore you should, you're going to end up lost. And it was that we overcame that also as part of, again, one of the nisim of Mitzrayim. Okay, the next page is number 15. Oof. Again, from Abishalom Shvadron, he says, Lo al yidei malach. So, and we'll do this a little bit more outside for the sake of time. But the basic question is how do we say, how can it be, we claim that God himself did it, there was no malach, there were no shlichim, there were no in-betweens. But the pasuk says, and in the continuation of the way we darshan it in Haggadah, it says, B'yad chazakov zonetiyah, and that's a pasuk that's written by all the makos. And it's not true that God brought all the makos himself. Again, he was the power behind it, but he sent Moshe to be the one to afflict to bring the makos on Paro. And furthermore, is the pasuk that's quoted as a proof that God himself did it is only written by makos bechoros. So how did that tell us about any of the other makos? So what's the Haggadah teaching us by saying that everything that happened was from God and it wasn't from a malach at all? So what he suggests is that the only reason, why was it that Makas Bechoros was effective and no other Makkah was effective in getting Klal Yisrael out? So he says that the only reason is because Hashem removed the hardening of their hearts at the point of Makas Bechoros. If he would have done that earlier, if he would have done that at the point of Choshech, then the Egyptians would have let them go at Choshech. The only reason that Makas Bechoros was because God decided at that point to remove the Egyptians' hardening of their hearts. They realized, you know, what's going on here, so they let Klal Yisrael go. So he says, once that happened, once God removed their hardened hearts, it wasn't just that they felt the effect of Makas Bechoros. Now, everything that had been happened had a very different perspective. The experience of all the other Makos, in which they had originally experienced with their hardened hearts, was now completely changed. So it was through Makas Bechoros, which God himself brought, that Bnei Yisrael were able to leave Mitzrayim, because the power of Makas Bechoros was multiplied by 10, because at that moment they experienced all the Makos anew. Because they were so stubborn, they were so pushing themselves not to, with their hardened hearts, not to experience anything and to be the effect of the Makos, then now that God himself brought Makos Bechoros, it changed the perspective of all the other Makos. And therefore, the Baal HaGadah can say that it really was God himself, because it was only at the point where God himself intervened, removed their hardened hearts, and now they felt all 10 Makos that Bnei Yisrael were able to go out. And that was where the Vayotzinu Hashem comes from. Why was it necessary that Hashem specifically should do it? Why couldn't he send the Malach? So Reb Nevenzahl says in the top left that because what was happening here was something very different. He says, it wasn't just removing a golos, but it changed the nature, it changed the stature of Klal Yisrael. We became a different type of nation, and therefore this Leda was basically a new birth of Klal Yisrael that needed God's intervention. That's not something that simply a Malach could do, and that's why God himself was the one who intervened, because it was only through God doing it that we could have this creation of a new entity of Klal Yisrael. The bottom of the page, number 17, of Oso Zamata. So we have that drasha, the pasuk says Beosos, and we learn that that is referring to the staff. It says Yesh Lahavin Kavanas Balagata Beomer Beoso Zamata. What does he mean? The mata wasn't the os, the staff wasn't the sign, the staff was the emtsa'i, it was what was used, it was the medium used in order to bring the osos, in order to bring the different wonders that would have their effect. So why is it that the Haggadah is focusing that the osos is the mata, is referring specifically to the mata? It seems inaccurate. And furthermore, he says that the pasuk that it's bringing is the one in which Hashem tells Moshe to do the three signs in front of Paro, that the snake is going to turn, the staff is going to turn into a snake, that any water will turn to blood, and that if he puts his arm into his cloak, it's going to come out with tzaraz on it. So that only one of those involved the matzah. So even the pasuk itself is clear that the osos have to be meaning something more than just the matzah. So why do we learn that the osos refer specifically to the matzah? So what it explains is that it says in the Torah that if they didn't hear the voice of the first one, they'll hear the voice of the last one. So what does it mean that a kol should have that a sign has a kol? So it explains that again, the purpose of these Makos was not just of the Mofsim, wasn't just to convince Paro, but it was also to convince Bnei Yisrael. And the kol represents the what comes from the inside. And just like our voice comes from the inside, it's the way that we can express ourselves. So the oath also had to have an expression. It had to be that the effect of the oath needed to be expressed. So he says that from the Tzvasemes that Mata comes from the language of Netiya, Hatayas Halev, of turning somebody in a certain direction. So he says that it really wasn't the oath itself that was. It wasn't the os that was important. Ki osos inam ikar. Rakat koach atomen. It was the potential that existed in the os to convince them. It was the message behind the os that was really what the focus was. So he says, uba osos zamata, mishum sheikar osos inam os. It's specifically to point out, don't think the main thing is the os. It's not the sign itself. It's the effect of the sign. And how do we hint to the fact that it was the effect of the sign and not the sign itself? Is because of the mata, that the mata is symbolic of this hatoya, of it comes from the same shorish of something which is convincing. So that's why specifically in order to show that it wasn't the oath, but rather it's the effect of the oath, it's what we're supposed to perceive because of the oath, that's why we learn out that the osos is the mata. We'll skip number 18, I think, but let's just look at number 19. This is here in English, so it's a little bit easier. So two things from Rav Shach's Haggadah. One interesting point is that we have these different drushas about the different Tanaim are arguing about whether each mako was one mako, four makos, five makos, and it's just very unclear what's going on. So we ask, what does Rav Elazar mean that each mako was four makos? So he explains that everything that happens in the world always has different aspects to it, and what Rabbi Lozer was saying is that each makkah, there are four different aspects that we're supposed to appreciate. So he gives an example. He says, let's say the makkah of dam. So you have the makkah of blood, so there are many different factors that took place. Meaning, okay, so God needed to punish them. So why specifically did he bring blood? Why did he attack their water source? Why did the fish need to die? Why did it smell so bad? There are many different aspects that if you examine more deeply, that are part of the cheshbon. And what it's trying to reflect, and what Rabbi Lozer is trying to say, is that all of that is part of God's plan. Meaning none of those just happened to be. It happened to be that the fish died. There was a reason that he wanted the fish. I don't know what that reason is. But again, each makkah has these different aspects. And the message is that whenever God does anything, there are multiple aspects to it. And everything is midah keneged midah. Everything, again, in a way that humans can't make these calculations, God is able to make a calculation that nothing happens which is you know, by coincidence or because, oh, well, once I was making it blood, so it has to be that the fish died. No, there was a reason, and it's just reflecting the fact that all the makos, part of the job in the Lal Seder is to try and reflect more deeply and to think about what the different aspects were. And again, this is the main part, really, of the Haggadahs, because especially in terms of getting the children about, the makos are something that everybody can relate to and everybody can understand. So to think, even, you know, why was it that God did it this way? In the Haggadah Hagyone Halacha, Ramirsky, number 20, points out something very interesting. I don't know what to make of it exactly, but he says if you add up all the different makos that are listed, so you have the 10 makos, then you have Rabbi Huda's 3 words, and then you have Rabbi Yosef Aglio comes out with 60, and Rabbi Lazar who says 240, and Rabbi Kiva says 300. You add it all together, and all the makos that are listed in the Haggadah come out to 613. It's cute. I don't know what to do with it. But it's one of those things that people like. I think he's trying to explain that there's a connection between the mitzvahs. Now, obviously, there's an overlap between all of them, meaning the 10 makos are the same as the 3 simanim of Rabbi Yehuda is a summary of the 10 makos. It wasn't that there were 613 makos, but in terms of some symbolism, there's got to be something to it if it equals 613. Okay, you can file that away. People like those kind of things. In number 21 is one of my most... if anybody has to go, don't... I'm trying not to hold you up too much. But number 21, I think, is one of the most fascinating... I don't know if it's a word, but understandings of the Haggadah is how Kriyas Yam Suf took place. So what exactly happened to Bnei Yisrael? I think we generally understand that Bnei Yisrael started on one side and then they came up to they needed to get to the other side. The water's in front of them, so the water split and they went through to the other side. So he quotes from Tosos that Tosos says, no, that's not what happened. Because the Gemara tells us that Bnei Yisrael were afraid. They said, after they came out of the Yamsa, they said, how do we know that the Egyptians aren't also with us? How do we know that they didn't emerge? So says, what do you mean? Look behind you. The water fell down. There are no Egyptians, and they're all gone. So you can see, if you just went through the Yam Suf, take a look back. If it's closed, and there are no Egyptians, so you know. So he says, the Tosva says, that's not what happened. Tosva says, in the second paragraph, the second set of underlines, that Tosva therefore concludes that the Jews did not walk across the dry seabed of the Red Sea. Rather, they entered on one side, traveled into the sea a bit, and then after walking in a semicircular path, they emerged further down the coast on the same side. Meaning the only purpose of Kriyas Yam Suf was really to drown the Egyptians. It wasn't that they needed to get to the other side and they didn't have a boat and they needed to travel over. The purpose of the miracle of Kriyas Yam Suf was to get rid of the Egyptians. And then he says that the Mechilta says that it wasn't just one path, but it was 12 semicircular paths, that every Shevet had their own path. And that's what you can see in the picture, puts everything together there, is that there are 12 different paths. And they go out on the same side. And he says, with that you can understand something else. It seems to be the pasuk says, "Vayinahagel bechaydus vayasar zofa markavosav," that the wheels came off the chariots of the Egyptians, and they had trouble going through the sea. What's the significance of that? So he said, now you understand. He says because the ones who traveled through the most inner path were going to come out much before the people in the outermost path, because the outer semicircular, it's concentric semicircles, is much longer. So if the Egyptians followed some of the Jews into one of the more inner paths, then those Egyptians would emerge before the Jews coming from one of the outer paths. So in order to make sure that it would take them much longer, God had this miracle happen that their wheels came off. It took the chariots much longer to get through the seabed, and that way none of the Egyptians emerged before the last of the Bnei Yisrael who were in the outermost path, which took the longest time to go through the Yam Suf until they came out. Very interesting perspective.
So it opened up in 12 places. 12
like 12 columns, basically.
I don't understand where he gets the whole thing of the semicircle stuff. Why does he?
Because the Gemara says that Bnei Yisrael were afraid after they came out that maybe the Egyptians came out also.
Right. They didn't see them being killed in the water?
So apparently not. So how did they not see them?
But there were thousands.
If they were on the other side of the water and the Egyptians are following behind them and they see the water is down, they don't see any Egyptians, so obviously there are no Egyptians. What are they concerned about? So Tosva says, no, if they came out on the same side, so they don't know if all the Egyptians went in, they don't know if there are any Egyptians left on the side, they don't know if the Egyptians in one of the other circles are, you know, they're further up ahead of up here. Maybe they came through one of the inner semicircles and there are Egyptians over there, and there may be still over here, are higher up on the coast. So Tosva says, based on that, that it must be that they went through in a semicircle. Very bothersome.
Because they asked for
the right, that's Tosva's proof.
If they had gone to the other side, then they wouldn't have been worried.
Exactly. I'm sorry. That's what we spoke about earlier. Sometimes you have to revisit the ideas from your youth and think about it anew.
so much for all the people who say it could never happen because we can't find proof.
Right.
This is a great proof.
Right. We're getting there. We're almost done. And Rav Shlomo Shadron in the bottom column, he asks, why is it that when it comes, why do we say halal at the Seder when we on Purim? So the Gemara says we don't say halal because the story of the miracle, the story of the Megillah, replaces the halal. So why doesn't the story of the Haggadah replace the halal? Why do we need to say halal also? So he says they're fundamentally different. That on Purim, the idea is to tell over a story that happened in the past. That's not what we're trying to do on Pesach. On Pesach, the goal is that through the story that we're reading about that happened in the past, we relive it in the present. If we relive it in the present, so then we need to say halal because it pertains to us also. There's a halacha on the last page now, the number 23 on top, also from Shalom Shadron. He says there's a halacha. The Gemara says that you're allowed to drink between the different kosos of wine. You're allowed to drink something, but between the third and fourth cups, you're not allowed to drink anything. So why? It looks like there are probably technical halachic reasons, but he suggests also that maybe that there's something that Chazal are hinting to. As he said, that the four lashonos of geula are, again, as we said, four different types of geula. So he says the first two, Votsesi Vitsalti, exist on their own. It was Votsesi, was the work wasn't so difficult. Vitsalti, that they didn't have to work. They didn't have to work at all. What's Vigo'alti and Vilakachti? Vigo'alti is that he took us out of Mitzrayim. So what was the point of being taken out of Mitzrayim? They didn't have to work anymore. What was the point of being taken out of Mitzrayim? So he says that the Vigo'alti goes together with Vilakachti. What's Vilakachti? Vilakachti, the Gemara tells us, refers to Matan Torah. That we're getting the Torah. So what Chazal hinted to with this halacha is that you can't disconnect number three from number four. Because once there was no work anymore, so number one and number two stopped the physical shibud. Okay, so those exist on their own. There's a value to that. But being taken out of Mitzrayim without getting the Torah in the end, there was no purpose. The only purpose of taking Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim was for the purpose of Matan Torah. So since three, Vigo'alti, Vilakachti, are inherently connected, you can't have one without the other one, so too we hinted to, Chazal hinted to it with this halacha, that you can't be mafsid, you can't have another cup of wine, or you can't have something to drink between the third cup and the fourth cup, because those have to be, they have to be together, right, together as a unit.
Even though we say in Dayenu, that it would have been enough.
Right. Right. I think that's talking, again, Dayenu is a broader discussion, but Dayenu basically talks about our Hakaras HaTov. Our appreciation has to be that way. In terms of what the purpose of taking us out from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's perspective was, it would not have fulfilled his mandate, and I think that's what we're trying to hint to here. But it's a very valid point. Okay, two more to go. Rav Nevinzel says, why is it Shvuch HaMasal HaGoyim? Why is that suddenly we're talking about destroying the Goyim? So some suggest that since it used to be a tradition amongst anti-Semites to have the blood libels on the night of Pesach, so remember that. But he says that that's probably inaccurate because the paragraph existing in the Haggadah preceded the blood Bibles. So why we say Shvuch HaMasa? So he suggests something very interesting. He says that now that we finished the Siyum, we did everything that we're supposed to do, Yochel Lesorig, Lesorer Chas V'Shalom Kitshur Gakach, Shalom Sidarnu Et HaPesach Ach Lovos Sinu Karim Pesach. The fact that we went through and we did all the mitzvahs of the night can in a certain sense be a potential for the Satan to tell Hashem, okay, they did it, but they didn't really do it. They didn't bring the Korban Pesach. Why didn't they bring the Korban Pesach? So we say, Shvuch HaMaschal HaGoyim. If it was up to us, if the Goyim wouldn't have destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, if they would give us the opportunity to go back and build the Beis HaMikdash, we'd be there, we'd bring the Korban Pesach. So don't think that the reason that we're being massaged, that we're talking about it, instead of offering it, is our decision. We'd be more than happy to go there. If you would mete out punishment against the Goyim, so then we'd be happy to go there. That's what's holding us back. So as a defense for the fact that we didn't bring the Korban Pesach, so we say, Shvuch HaMaschal Ela Goyim. And then the final piece that I put here is from the Hal of Venir Paro Vechilo Yamsuf Kidom Kasto from the Hodium, again relates a little bit to Kriyas Yamsuf. It's interesting that Rav Shvajon here assumes as a Dara Pashut, it's obvious that everybody knows. In the second paragraph, Yodim Kulanu Shibnei Yisrael Lo Chatzu Asayam Yiruach Zela Shekinegda. They didn't go through the Yamsuf from one side to the other. Elo Asa Sivu B'soch Hayam Kashem Yoso Ruach Shibo Nechnesu Elel Yatsu. They went out and back and forth on the same side. So, again, whatever we learned before, we were surprised that this was obvious to him. But he asks the question. He said, so, Mayata Tarakliz Bonin, Ma Chashva Mitzrim Lefnei Shenichnesu Al Yam. So why did the Mitzrim follow them in? Do they realize that they were only making a circle? Or maybe they thought they were going from side to side. So he thinks that from the fact that it says, there were these high walls of water, and Chazal tells that the waves were still functioning, but they're basically going up as opposed to crashing down, that the water went up for very, very high. There's no way that they couldn't have seen that at least from the inner circle, that they were coming out the same side. So why would they have followed them in? It should have been clear from the fact that the water was so high that they weren't going straight through, because then they should have been able to see straight through. So why is it that they didn't follow them in? So he says
that they did,
right? Why would they follow him? So he says that the pasuk says v'chizakias leiv paro, and then it says after it says that he strengthened Paro's heart, it says v'ani hinanim mechazekas leiv Mitzrayim, that I strengthened the Egyptian's heart. It says why did change in language? And then why is it says v'yirzefu Mitzrayim, that the Egyptians ran after them, and it says v'yavoach, and they traveled after them. What's the difference? So he suggests, based on Chazal say that originally Paro had to convince the Egyptians to run after them. He had to tell them, okay, they have your money, you should go after them. The Egyptians didn't want to go after them. That was after Hashem hardened Paro's heart. But at that point, he hadn't hardened the hearts of the people. So Paro was the one who needed to convince them. Then when they get to the point where they're staying on the Yamsuf, then Hashem hardened their hearts as well. And that's why it says, V'ani mechazek es leiv Mitzrayim. Then it says that he hardened the hearts of Mitzrayim. It doesn't say Paro. And once that's true, then it was, they didn't really have a choice anymore. And they weren't thinking clearly, because they had their hearts hardened. Again, it was part of Hashem wanting to punish them. And that's why it says, not just by years of Mitzrayim, not just they ran after them, because they're running after them, that made sense. Paro convinced them they wanted their money. By Avoach Areihem, why do you say that they went after them? Because that was something that didn't make sense. That was only after their heart had been hardened. And then one final word, which isn't in here, very quick, is we conclude the Haggadah with the Shana Habav Yerushalayim. The only two times that we have the expression that we use, and again, basically, of the Shana Habav Yerushalayim are at the end of Yom Kippur and the end of Pesach. And it's usually very inspirational, so I don't know, why don't we end every Yontif with that? Seems to be a positive way to always conclude. So Rav Khan Shlita at NYU, he suggested that the Yom Kippur and Pesach are unique in that the two major aspects of the day are missing because we don't have the Beis HaMikdash. On Yom Kippur, we're missing the Avodah of the Kohen Gadol. The whole day is focused about what the Kohen Gadol should have done. And on Pesach, everything should have been the Korban Pesach. So on the two Yom, every other Yontif, okay, we still have the Mitzvot. It may not be in their ideal form, but basically we have the Yontif. So on the two times when we realize that everything was lacking, we didn't have the Yontif the way it's supposed to be, so then we dive in and we reflect on the fact that Be'ezras Hashem L'shana Haba'a B'Yerushalayim.